The name is Bala Gnanaprakasam. I've had a number of different roles in our church. The most recent one, I co-chaired the Inclusive Church Implementation Group, which wrote our church's strategy for justice, dignity, and solidarity, working towards a truly inclusive church. Before that, I was vice president of the Methodist Conference, 2018 to 2019. I was the first Synod Secretary of the newly formed London District many years ago. And in my local church, I've been a steward, senior steward, property steward, and so on. And I've done the similar jobs in my circuit as well.
What does an inclusive church look like to you?
For me, I think what it looks like is where we have banished discrimination and all God's children will be able to play a full part using their God-given gifts in the church and outside it. That means there will be no discrimination based on race, no discrimination based on gender, no homophobia, and of course, we will be a church that enables disabled people to come into church, not just worship in our church, but do be a full member contributing right across the activities of our church.
Thinking about your open letter to the British Methodist Church that you wrote during COVID, what was the inspiration for that?
Well, during lockdown, we were all staying at home. And over the early lockdown period, I was thinking about lockdown and what it could mean to our church. At some point, we will emerge out of this lockdown. So I was pondering on what will our church look like. And I wrote to, I dropped an email to a number of, some of my friends, and I invited them to ponder with me. And we met on Zoom, because that was the only way we could meet. And it became clear that we all were thinking about a church. What would it look like? And given what COVID had done to our community, it exposed the fault lines in our system. The poor and black people and brown people were disproportionately impacted on by COVID. And it became clear that the inequalities made it worse. And so we thought, what would the church do about this? What should the church be like? And we concluded that, among other things, we had to become a justice-seeking church. Evangelism is important, and we totally subscribe to it. But we believe, and I still do, that it has justice-seeking should be alongside all the other important things that the church is committed to do.
And the message, I think, of the letter was very hopeful. It was hopeful for the future of the church.
Yes, we were looking forward. And I think we were challenging our fellow Methodists to journey with us and uncover what it could mean to be truly inclusive, truly looking outward and being the carrier of good news. You know, Jesus spent all of his time among the poor. He was the best leader for the justice seeking. And the open letter concepts that we put forward, in my view, were a true discipleship following Jesus' command to us.
That being said, have you felt like the letter has made an impact? What was the impact?
It's quite a strange feeling, actually. When we first published the letter, it is true to say, I would describe the response we had from the establishment quite hostile. And I was actually staggered that there was so much hostility. You know, one of them even actually said, we were exploiting the vulnerable. And I just couldn't understand that. There were 700 signatures. Wow. And the people who signed them were former district chairs, current district chairs, former presidents, former vice presidents. And so I was actually quite taken aback and very disappointed that the establishment couldn't see.
Would you say your open letter, was that impacted at all by the Black Lives Matter movement? And did that have an impact on your thoughts at the time?
Actually, we started thinking about what the church would look like before George Floyd, and before it all became a much bigger issue than it was before. The Black Lives Matter issues were have been there for a long time. But our thinking and writing started before Black Lives Matter. That is not to say that we don't recognize the importance of the Black Lives Matter movement and what it has done in our society and also in our church. What we have to also recognize is, you know, as a Methodist church, we've always been at the cutting edge of social justice. And that comes to us naturally. However, we haven't made the type of inroads and changes that is consistent with our history. And so when Black Lives Matter, and actually even before that movement came into prominence, we already started publishing in our website issues around inclusive church, racism. And if you go into our website now, you will find a whole section on matters of race and so on.
And I wanted to take you back and think about maybe your childhood and what has inspired you to do this work and to take on this journey. You know, where did you begin?
I often wonder what started first, whether my passion for justice, socialism came first, or whether my faith came first. And I've been thinking about it, and I think I can trace it back to the time when the Methodist Church in Colombo had a youth fellowship. And on a Saturday morning, members of the youth fellowship used to go into the slums of Colombo and hand out dry rations. And I suppose that was the time when I was exposed to poverty. I was in a family which is relatively well off. We were never hungry. We always had food. But going into the slums and working with the youth fellowship exposed me, not that I needed exposure, because I was living around, you know, when you live in a place like Colombo, you have no option but to see what is going on. But in the slums was, I think, the awakening that this can't be right. And that was, I believe that was the beginning of my journey with Christ and justice.
And so this carried on when you came to England. And when did you come to England then?
Well, I came as an engineering student in 1965. And after I finished my education, I was offered a job and I took it. And as the years went by, I got involved in local politics. I was elected as a Labour councillor twice in Lewisham. one of those terms I spent as a Lewisham member in the Inner London Education Authority. At the time, it was the largest single education authority in the country, if not in Europe. And I got involved in a number of areas, justice-seeking areas. So that's, and from there, I became a member of the Christian Aid Board. I was also a member of MRDF, as it was then known, All We Can. And I have been active in the church as well as in politics for many years.
Yeah. I remember you told me a story about the blind lady.
Yes.
And I do want you to tell me that story, please. Oh. If you can remember.
Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Okay.
I put that among the top 10 achievements. All candidates go out campaigning and knock on people's doors and say, will you vote for me? And I was down this road when I was a candidate, a Labour candidate at the local council elections in Lewisham. And one of the canvassers came up to me and said, there's this couple who wants to see you. I said, sure. And that's what candidates do, you see. They go in and say, what can I do for you? And the couple said, we are blind. And the blind lady was working in London Bridge, and she used to walk from her home to Ladywell Station. And one part of her journey was a really treacherous road where the traffic at 8 o'clock in the morning was impossible. Dense, fast traffic. And she said to me, I'll vote for you if, when you're elected, you get a bollard put on this busy road so that I can cross the road safely and get to work. And I said, yes, of course, and went on my way. And a week after the election results were published, I had a letter from this lady saying, hey, it reminded me of the conversation. And I thought, yes. So I took a proposal to the planning committee. Local members are allowed to do that. And I took that there, and there was opposition. There was opposition from the police, there was opposition from the planning people, and there was an opposition from the highways people. And the police opposition was, the traffic on that road is too thick and too fast, we can't have a bollard. I said, the police have just made my case. And then the planning officer said, oh, we can't put a bollard there, and I can't remember exactly why. And the highways people said, we haven't got the money. So I said to the elected councillors, are you really telling me that with the massive budget that we have, at the time, this is in the 80s, it was over £60 or £70 million a year. Are you actually telling me that we can't put a bollard so that a blind woman can get to work safely? To this day, that bollard exists. And for years, she was able to get to work to London Bridge, take refuge at this bollard, safely to the station. So that was for me, that was a great achievement.
Absolutely.
That we can work against the system, the police, the planners, the highway people, saying it can't be done. If you simply leave it to the bureaucrats, and I'm using the word bureaucrats in the widest sense, they have no sense of the impact that decisions make on ordinary people, and saying, no, we can't have a bollard because the traffic is too fast and too thick. The exact reason why we needed it.
Absolutely. And
you know, our faith is about hope, and it's about transforming hope. So the reason we are on this journey, the reason we do what we do, is because the hope and the transformative power of the cross. And what I would say is that hope and the possibilities of transformation is what has driven me. And I think our calling is about grasping that hope and working towards a true transformation. So we have a great opportunity, and let's seize the hope and the transformation that comes from it.